Well, what do we do now? I don't even know where to begin to tell you the truth tonight. What happened today in Orem, Utah has no place in America. None. Political violence has no place. America is stronger when people in a free society get to express their opinions. It is weakened when they are killed for it. I don't care who they are. And it happened again today. Conservative activist Charlie Kirk, who's super popular with college kids, shot and killed at an event he was hosting at Utah Valley University in Orem, Utah.
You're listening to KDKA Radio in Pittsburgh. React to the shooting death of Charlie Kirk in this special edition of Red Meat. Next, we'll bring you to the campus where Kirk drew his last breath. And we're going to take this moment to tell you about Charlie Kirk and why his death is such a flashpoint in the United States. Charlie Kirk was a firestorm in human form, one of the highest-profile conservative activists and media personalities in the U.S., and a trusted ally of President Donald Trump. He was 31 years old. He was married. He had two young kids. He said what some considered to be scandalous things, and then invited people to argue with him. He founded Turning Point, an organization created to bring conservative ideas to liberal colleges, and was just kicking off a speaking tour when he was killed. His last exchange was with a student who asked how many shootings are done by transgender people. Kirk answered, "Too many." And then blood poured from his mouth and his neck exploded. The broader answer really is, there are too many politically motivated shootings in the U.S. and too much mass violence at American schools. Period. Full stop. His death has people across the aisle reminding us that no matter which political party you follow, we are Americans, and in America, people should be safe in public places, no matter how you feel about them personally. Disagree? Sure, go ahead. Argue, yell even. But opening fire because you don't like someone's political views? We shouldn't need to be reminded of this, but for some reason we have to say it. Again. And again. And then again. Killing to make a point is never right. Here's more from KDKA.
The governor of Utah, Spencer Cox. This is part of his statement just a few moments ago.
Our nation is broken. We've had political assassinations recently in Minnesota. We had an attempted assassination on the governor of Pennsylvania, and we had an attempted assassination on a presidential candidate and former president of the United States.
Our nation is broken. First, I want to go live to Utah Valley University. They call it UVU. Slade Jepson is a student there, and Tanner Ricks is a student at BYU, which is next door. And I know these a lot of these kids because they're missionaries in Pittsburgh, and they go back home to Utah or Idaho, and a lot of them go to BYU, and they go to Utah Valley. And Tanner Ricks, you go to BYU, but there were quite a few BYU kids who went to the Charlie Kirk debate rally outdoor activity event today. So it was a mix of students from UVU, BYU. And I want to ask both of you, beginning with Slade, what is the campus like tonight? The students have to be traumatized, Slade.
I would describe the campus right now as very somber. Not all classes were canceled, of course. And it's really sad to see so many people show out at a campus and at an event to watch and, who knows, debate, talk about all these different things that we as a country in America can talk about because we have freedom to talk about this. Mm-hmm. And it's sad to see how much of it can just go south just like that. I would describe it as somber and shock. I feel like most people don't know how to react because this doesn't happen every day. This is something that should never happen. And I don't know. I feel like a lot of people are in shock. is how I describe it.
It's the way
and
the way I see it as well. Tanner, what about you? Same question, Tanner.
Yeah, I would agree with Slade in saying that people are shocked, and I would say even horrified. I was in class when we discovered the news. I had an individual, a friend of mine, who was actually at the event, who texted me saying that he was just running and had just gone to his car shortly after the shooting. And we announced it to the teacher, and the teacher announced it to the class, and everyone was just kind of horrified. You know, hard to believe that this could happen so close here in Utah, surrounded by, you know, people who support Charlie Kirk. And so, you know, no one kind of knows what to do. As I walked out of class, everyone was shocked. Everyone was talking about it. People are stunned. And I would just say overall, like, kind of, we don't really know what to do. We've kind of just been sitting here talking about it, watching the news, kind of lost motivation for anything else.
Let me ask both of you, and I get that. I get the adjectives you guys are saying, shock and trauma and the whole thing. The governor mentioned that they're interviewing a person of interest right now. The person's in custody, but where that goes, we don't know, because they had one person arrested earlier today who they had to let go. It was had nothing to do with this shooting. For so many hours today, when after they realized that they didn't have the right person, there was, I don't know, a professional killer, a sniper, I don't know, on the loose. You guys had to be, you and your friends had to be quite nervous and scared.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Tanner, you absolutely. Go first. Go ahead, Tanner.
Yeah. No, I completely agree. We kind of didn't really know what to do over here at BYU. We were only, you know, a short 10 minutes away from UVU, and we had, you know, police officers driving down the road as quick as they could to get to UVU. But, you know, I was getting calls from friends and from my mother, you know, asking me if I was okay, what I was doing. You know, we were talking as a roommates about it. And so we kind of were in this weird limbo where we really weren't sure what to do. Obviously, UVU was on lockdown, but here at BYU, things kind of just remained the same. But people definitely kind of left campus.
And but BYU, when I was on BYU and then Slade, remember, you know, our friend Aiden and I, we came over to pick you up at UVU where this happened. To me, it's just right down the street. So, and everybody knows everybody. Slade, same mm-hmm. question for you, Slade. I, you know, during those hours, and they say a person of interest, but they haven't charged this person or said that this is the guy. I don't know. We have to wait and see. But that had to be a tense time, Slade.
Oh, absolutely. I was definitely, like I said before, I was a lot in shock, and I feel like this is like a moment that. And so close to such a controversy like 9/11, right? It's, what day is it today? The 10th?
Mm-hmm.
Something like that. It's so close to that date. And I think it's one of those moments where I'll never forget when people asked, where were you when Charlie Kirk was murdered?
Wow.
And that's the first thing I thought of. I thought about how big this really was. And nationally, right? Like, one of my friends who had not lived in Utah was one of the first people to send me videos of it, and I was like, okay, this is a very big deal.
A very big deal indeed. Here's Lenny McAllister on the Big K Morning Show talking about who Charlie Kirk was and what exactly he represented.
A lot of people did not know who Charlie Kirk was, but you did. When did you meet him?
I met Charlie Kirk in 2010. A lot of people know him from Turning Point. They know him from, you know, the Trump campaign. They know him from, you know, his radio show. I met him as a high school kid at Tea Party events that I spoke at regularly when I was in Illinois. I used to see him at least once a month. He was the youngest person at the events, and I would spend time with him, and we would talk. And it's when I heard the news, Larry, I didn't go back to any of the stuff, you know, politically. I didn't even go back to the stuff that he and I may disagree upon now. And there were plenty of political issues that we did disagree upon at this point in time. But I went back to the teenage kid that would come over to me and want to take a picture, or the teenage kid that would come up to me at the convention down in Tampa. Every time I see him, all I see is the teenage kid that I first met. And And that's what I saw when I heard the news yesterday.
And he was a teenage kid in 2012 when he started Turning Point USA. How did he rise to such high impact at the highest level?
He came in at the right time. He came in at the height of the Tea Party movement. He was motivated to want to bring a conservative voice to college campuses. And I think it's very easy for people to forget that 12 to 15 years ago, there was a huge backlash against conservatives even speaking on college campuses. And there was a big issue that people would talk about for years, and something that the Trump administration is maybe overcorrecting upon now is the lack of balance on political campuses. He wanted to create spaces where conservatives could get their point of view across and not feel as though they were ostracized. And when you take that, coupled with the Tea Party movement, it was the Obama presidency at the time, so it was a counterweight to that. And he was a young person that was speaking to a generation that wasn't being spoken to at that point in time, other than the Obama movement of 2008. It came at the right time, and he caught lightning in a bottle.
And that said, this rally on the campus of Utah Valley University, thousands of people were there yesterday in a beautiful sunny day. He was throwing out hats to the crowd and then sat down and did a Q&A. Explain how this process worked, where he would go to the campuses, and apparently this was the first of many that he was going to visit this fall. And what did these gatherings present in terms of an exchange with the student body?
You know, anybody that's done public speaking knows that you have this mix of both being vulnerable but also being personable, and that's basically what it was. He was going there to have an opportunity to answer some questions, to give some perspectives. It's something that plenty of folks, I've done it myself over the years, where you go into an environment and you engage people. And that's what this was. Now, of course, Turning Point is a, you know, over $50 million operation, so it's going to look a little different than when other activists or other speakers go and do it. But that's basically the gist of it. To be able to go around and now that the school year had started, go on a school tour and talk to people and express ideas and kind of in Charlie style and many other styles, almost have like a mini Q&A/debate in front of sometimes hundreds, sometimes thousands of people.
And that said, I'm curious about the platform for Turning Point USA. We are joined once again by our own political analyst, Lenny McAllister. Lenny, thinking about Charlie Kirk and his family, his wife Erica, a former Miss Arizona entrepreneur, philanthropist, played collegiate basketball too. They married in May of 2021. She's the founder of Proclaim Streetwear and Everyday Heroes Like You and host of a podcast called Midweek Rise Up. They have two young children, a son and a daughter. And again, I think of their family first. His wife also holds a doctorate in biblical studies from Liberty University and studied political science and international relations at Arizona State University. That said, for those that don't know Charlie Kirk and the fact that he founded Turning Point USA, what are some of the platforms that this is based on?
So when I see the name on television, I not only think about all the platforms that he created and all the different people that he gave platforms to through his activism, but I still think about the young guy that I met. Think about sitting down and, you know, sharing chicken tenders or French fries. I think about riding public transportation in Chicago. I think about the Tea Party events in different parts of the northern part of Illinois, whether it's Libertyville or Lake County. I think about just the whole trajectory of what he did, from literally talking to me about what he was going to name the organization, him coming up to me in Tampa and telling me, I think I'm going to name it Turning Point. I'm going to start on the paperwork with Bill as soon as I get back to Illinois from the convention, to seeing his early days. I had somebody posted on Facebook and tagged me with it and reminded me of a story where in 2012, we were all going around together and Charlie Kirk and I were the two headliners at a event in Illinois, which is, of course, is, you know, kind of funny to think about considering how far he went with this. But I think about all those things, and then I just think about 31 years old and just where we are as a country, where, you know, we've been living 1968 for many, many years now. We've been living 1968 for almost 8 to 10 years between the assassination attempts and now an assassination and the pandemic. Is we're living through some dramatic times as Americans.
Sure. It's like 1968 in the sense of our public spaces feeling unsafe and the threat of violence lurking all around. But it's unlike 1968 in the weapons of war that so many people have access to. Here's former Secret Service agent John Hudson talking about the shooter who killed Charlie Kirk, the specifics of the gun he used and the kind of skills it took.
Well, we're looking at about 200 yards, which, quite honestly, in Marine Corps boot camp, which I was a former Marine as well as a Secret Service agent, former Marine, we start practicing at 200 yards, and that's where we train at the minimum distance. So it's not, you know, there have been reports it's a very tough shot. It's a long distance. It's not that long of a distance if you're trained, which leads us to believe there's probably some professional training that this individual has had to be able to take that one shot, one kill of a target from maybe 12 inches in diameter. And that's the distance that the Marines trained from, as well as 300 and 500. But from 200 yards on top of a rooftop, from what the reports suggest and the images and video that have come out suggest, that's where the perpetrator set up there. He was in a prone position, basically laying on his belly. That's a very simple shot to make from, you know, someone who has a day of worth of training, quite honestly.
Really?
So it's not that far. It's not that far out as some may think it is. Maybe for shooting a deer in the woods, for the average hunter, it might seem like it's a long shot away, but from someone who has gone through training, this is a very short shot.
So that said, John, would we believe that this person had that kind of training? Because it seems like a single shot from that distance, you would have to have some training. And what kind of rifle? Would it be a sniper rifle, or could you do this with a simple assault rifle?
Yeah, so you can do this with the assault rifle. You can do it with an AR, which is considered an assault rifle. Definitely a sniper rifle with a scope. I'm sure this probably had some type of scope on it. And again, in Marine Corps training at 200 yards in the offhand position where you're standing up and you have that weapon trained to downrange on a 12-inch bullseye, you're hitting it in the offhand position. With this guy on his belly, there's, you know, from a trained person, you know, you're going to hit this probably 10 out of 10 times, and it's not a difficult shot. So there are a couple things that lead me to believe it's a professional hit. One, the way he's was able to surreptitiously get onto the campus carrying a long gun and escape capture on the departure. So this was rehearsed. You know, when Charlie Kirk shows up to these types of events, it's probably, you know, 3-4 weeks, maybe out to a month plus of security planning that goes into this. In this particular case, it was a kickoff of a series of university speeches that he was doing across the country. And this marked the kickoff of that with some 4,000 people there. Stone had the time to plan the escape, to set up and avoid CCTV to some extent. I'm sure as the video unfolds and they scour through that, they'll identify this guy and he will be captured, or this suspect, should I say, and he will be captured at some point.
You feel confident in that?
I feel confident that he will be captured. He, she will be captured without a doubt. You can't just get on with today's technology, as you know, even in the Pittsburgh area, with license plate recognition systems, with the amount of CCTV, closed circuit television systems on the streets, at traffic signal lights, that they will go back, they will investigate this person going up a stairwell somewhere along the way to get up to that roof. And typically when you enter in any of the buildings on schools, you have cameras facing outward of people entering buildings and of their surrounding campus in what we call the common area. So I believe wholeheartedly that Cash Patel, his group of people, it's an FBI problem now, that they will have all man on deck and they will capture this guy, and it will be soon.
Such was Charlie Kirk's humanity that many, many people, especially young people, feel like they knew him. Here's more on that with Mark Cox at KFTK Radio. The Mark Cox Show was live. They were doing a special on 9/11 when they had to pivot to another national tragedy.
Charlie was also a man of deep, deep faith. And we take comfort in the knowledge that he is now at peace with God in heaven.
So we're playing there a clip from President Trump last night talking about the horrific shooting death of Charlie Kirk. I didn't know the guy. I almost feel like I knew him because I watched his clips and his interactions with people so often. And obviously that's a lot of what we're going to be talking about here this morning as we remember the lives lost on 9/11, today being the anniversary of that. 24 years. In here along with Dan Buck this morning and Ethan Bright, and we welcome you all into the broadcast. Dan, you and I were just talking about our memories from where we were on 9/11. I was on the anchor desk at Channel 4 when the first plane hit. Yeah. And then, of course, they never came back to us. We were going to do a local news cut-in, and at that point, the second plane hit, and everybody's lives changed that day.
Yeah, man, today's like a double gut punch, isn't it?
It is.
It's like the memories of 9/11, so real, just unreal, surreal, as we watched those planes hit, and we had to give the play-by-play. It was just one of those surreal moments. And yesterday, I've never felt that again except yesterday. You know, with Charlie's death, it was like you. I didn't know him personally, but I certainly felt I did. He's a real dude. He was out there speaking the truth and boldly going places that nobody else would go. He went into the belly of the beast.
He did.
And, it was tough. Man.
Yeah,
tough.
Anybody, and I can hear the emotion in your voice from it. Anybody who does what we do for a living understands the difficulty of what Charlie Kirk made look easy. And that would be to go into a crowd of people and let absolutely anybody come up to a microphone and challenge you on any subject they picked. And then to have the intellectual ability to dissect them point by point with no notes in front of you, it's something that I enjoyed on an almost daily basis, watching his clips from when he went to Oxford, England, and when he would be on these college campuses. And, you know, it didn't matter. He always treated people with respect. He was always calm. He never got worked up over anything. He's just that what happened yesterday was an assault on America. It was assault on free speech, and it was a gut punch for all of us who do what we do for a living. And for every American, whether you followed Charlie Kirk or not, you should be deeply disturbed, of course, by what happened yesterday.
And a patriot just remarkable the amount of love he had for this country and for the Constitution. He was a firm and staunch believer that the First Amendment was the very backbone of our society, that the minute the dialogue stops, the violence would begin. He would say that in repeated interviews about why he kept this mission going.
Right.
Of Prove Me Wrong tour was what he was on this time. And he said, because it's important that the voices are heard from both sides, that everyone has their platforms, because when we stop talking, the violence begins.
Thinking back to 24 years ago when 9/11 happened, and that brief, however brief, period of time afterwards when America did seem to come together, I wonder if there's any chance that happens this time. We're a very different society than we were even then. As divided as things seemed then, to see the members of Congress joining hands and coming together, I don't know if that happens again. It should. But I worry that we've gone down a path in this country where there is so much divide that we may not see that. Now, among other things, today we remember the people who died on 9/11. 2,977 lives, I believe, that were extinguished that day because of radical Islamic terrorism, and the men and women who jumped to serve our country at that point, who you know, in some cases left their given careers to go sign up at a recruiter's office to go fight for this country.
Charlie Kirk was gunned down in Utah, but no American city has been in the spotlight for violence as much recently as Minneapolis has. Politicians were gunned down in their homes. Kids were shot to death while praying in school. Here's Blows Olson, political analyst for WCCO in Minneapolis, with more perspective.
I want to talk rhetoric. I want to talk about some of the things that fuel this, but also want to get your reaction to what happened yesterday, boys.
Good morning, Vanita. First, my reaction is just I thought you and Steve said it best, and I was thinking of myself last night, is 24 years ago, this country was united by attacks against ourselves. And today we are divided by attacking within. And that is a dynamic that generationally we've never been through. The divide of the 60s and early 70s was extreme, was violent as well. We came out of that. You can hope that we can find our way forward. One of the most common questions I get is how do we get past this? How do we get people united again? And unfortunately, one of the only moments that I can point to is 9/11. And I say, unfortunately, I think that it's going to be something that attacks us, that forces us to look at each other and say, we are not our own enemies. There is clearly a disturbing subculture of people growing, I'm afraid, that believe this is the way to solve and settle our differences. I don't know if you remember where you were when Reagan was shot, but I was a young kid. And then you look back and you think about, like, why John Hinckley did it. It was for fame. Now everybody who's got this illness has their different reason, but we have to start understanding it. And the only way I've found in life to understand tough situations is to pause, reflect, and try to gather everything. And I hope the country and both sides take some time to pause and reflect, but I'm not optimistic today.
I know. Where do we go from this? This is horrible, you know, what happened yesterday and what happened to Melissa Hortman, Melissa and Mark Hortman. You know, this type of reaction is just, it shakes you to the core, you know, when things like this happen. So is this similar to when in the 60s?
Well, I was just going to say, I think I've told this story before, but a former colleague of mine was Humphrey's last speechwriter. And he's a huge 1968 historian. His name's Bob Meek. And I called him during 2020 and I said, okay, Mr. 1968, what do I need to understand? And he said, 5 to 6 years before anything settles out, it's going to be chaos for 5 to 6 years. Well, we're at 5 and I don't see any signs of it settling out. So I think that's one of the things I took from that generation.
And I talked to Governor Walz about contributing to the rhetoric, and I'm talking on both sides, people. I am not saying one side or another. I'm not blaming one side or another or multiple sides. There aren't even just two sides in this political world. There are many sides right now that you can point fingers at. But, you know, contributing to that. And I know some of the comments that Governor Walz said have come, you know, people have been very, very.
I'm more of an observer of his behavior. So I'm just going to call this one like I see it, as usual. He sat with you on the porch on the first day of the fair. Since then, on two occasions, in a political speech to a political body, first the DNC and second to a labor union picnic, he used what he thought was funny to attack the president in some form or fashion. And humor is not a way to suggest that somebody is dead. Humor and words like stupid red hats, that is as simple as an attack as anything. You can attack policy. You can disagree with policy. But since he sat on the porch on two occasions, very visible occasions, he chose that path. I've asked his staff about it, and they say, we kind of let it go when it's in front of a political audience. Well, here's me saying, If we have to deal with this for the next year and a half, full stop, this is going to be a very, very ugly governor's race.
There's blame on both sides, but here's WORD's Tara Servatius with more on how she believes the left has created a so-called assassination culture.
Lee, I think we lose track of how much the left has normalized violence.
Yeah.
Keep in mind, I mean, we're just months out from probably the most famous FBI director in modern times, James Comey, telling people to 86. We all know what that means. Anybody who's watched a mafia movie knows what that means. 86-47. Killed Trump. The head of the FBI. And let's not forget what Tulsi Gabbard said at the time. Because she's absolutely right about this. She was referencing this shocking Rutgers study, which I saved in a folder because I knew I'd need it again. Rutgers University's Network Contagion Research Institute, NCRI, did a poll. And here's what they found. An assassination, this is their words, not mine. A broader assassination culture appears to be emerging within segments of the U.S. public on the extreme left, with expanding targets now, including figures such as Donald Trump and Elon Musk. It's not just Luigi Mangione anymore, says Joel Finkelstein. He's the professor and founder of the organization. He says, we're seeing an expansion. Trump, Musk, and others are now being openly discussed as legitimate targets, often cloaked in meme culture and gamified online dialogue. Okay, but what are the numbers? She said, I mean, it's just the extreme left. I mean, what are we talking? The study goes on to reveal that 40% of those surveyed felt, but this is Democrats or self-identified left-wingers, 40% of those surveyed who were on the left, self-identified, felt violence against Tesla dealerships is an acceptable form of protest. You just set it on fire. 58% of leftists said shooting up dealerships was okay too. That was good. That was fine. 31% of respondents to the poll felt killing Elon Musk was at least somewhat justified. This is on the left. While another 38% felt the same way with the president. About the president, 38%. It's almost 40. Oh, God, no, I read it wrong. I'm sorry. Forgive me. It's worse than that. 31% of overall respondents, Lee, felt that taking out Elon Musk in the Rutgers study was at least somewhat justified. That's 38% of Americans. Another 38% felt the same about Trump. Among left-leaning respondents, those finding justification for outright murder of Musk and Trump, 48% said yes, outright murder of Musk is okay. 55% said Trump. That's a majority. And to sit here after zero Democrat leaders condemned James Comey for his tongue-in-cheek, seashell-oriented threat to kill Donald Trump, zero, and act like, well, you know, it was January 6th. You guys did this. You love it. And if you want to see what lust, bloodlust looks like this morning, don't take my word for it. Don't take my word at all about who the left is. Don't believe me. Go get on X. Go get on X. This would go look at it. Pull up X. And because we honestly, everyone should do this. You should get this is history. OK, this isn't just, you know, politics. This politics. Go pull up X. OK, if you're not a user of X, you're not usually used to it. You should know it is the number one most downloaded news app in the country. On the side, you'll see keywords. Right. Those are trending words. Words people are using a lot. Click on Charlie Kirk's been trending for 24 hours now. Just click on it. And that'll bring up all of the posts to Charlie Kirk. And you can read down them. And just read. I am shocked that there are so many that would say this. I just wonder if these people have jobs or no, or they just live in, I mean, like they don't, aren't worried about. And then you really want to see something, go over to Blue Sky this morning. The left-wing alternative to Twitter. Go over there. Go read it. Page after page after page after page after page. I'm telling you this morning, go read the left on this. Read them. See the sickness that Rutgers poll captured. And then you want to know what the problem in this country is? You'll know. That's the problem in this country right now. And it's that left-wing leaders have not only not turned the volume down, they have egged this on and turned it up. I mean, Lee, just one small example, shall we?
Okay.
Just one from the last week. Portland, Oregon. Ice building. Besieged. Where they have to keep snipers on the roof to keep the violent left-wing agitators who show up every night from hurting or killing ICE agents. Most nights, they fire tear gas and rubber bullets, but they've got real ones in anticipation for what is eventually coming.
Protesters clashing with ICE officers and federal agents outside an ICE facility in Portland overnight. Agents had to use tear gas while they were reportedly attempting to disperse the crowd. This was after protesters rolled out a guillotine and burned an American flag. According to a reporter there on the ground, no arrests were made, but the guillotine was seized.
And yeah, the liberal leadership loves this, Lee. So yeah. Nobody has been arrested in over 90 days of this, even though people who live in the apartment complex, this large apartment complex across the street, have called police begging, please, 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 because the noise ordinance, they keep the sirens going all night so that they're trying to make it hard for these ICE guys to work, you know, to concentrate. Right. And the police won't even enforce the noise ordinance. That's the left right there. That's who they are. You think that doesn't encourage violence? You think they don't see that online? And you think, oh, we can roll around guillotines. Maybe we'll actually use one. No condemnation for left-wing leaders. They're complicit in it. They won't send the police. Did you hear this yesterday on MSNBC? This is, you know, the Charlie Kirk killing is breaking.
Right.
Matt Dowd is on there.
Oh, yeah.
The logic, and you'll see this throughout the threads, too, on X, that Charlie Kirk is responsible for his own killing. He deserved it. And his rhetoric caused it. This idea that is very mainstream on the left, very mainstream, that if you say things we disagree with, we can't be responsible for what happens to you.
He's been one of the most divisive, especially divisive younger figures in this, who is constantly sort of pushing this sort of hate speech or sort of aimed at certain groups. And I always go back to hateful thoughts lead to hateful words, which then lead to hateful actions. And I think that's the environment we're in, that people just, you can't stop with these sort of awful thoughts you have and then saying these awful words and not expect awful actions to take place.
Matt,
and that's the unfortunate environment we're in.
You can tell she knows he screwed up. Matt, you can't expect not to get shot by us. What? That's the norm. That's how they think. That's who they are. And don't take my word for it. Go read it on X right now. Musk isn't censoring it, and good for him.
Mm-hmm.
Because we need this. We need people to see who they are. Now, I want to replay that little part right there, because this is stunning. And again, you'll see it echoed throughout all these left-wing posts glorifying the death of Charlie Kirk this morning.
Saying these awful words and not expect awful actions to take place.
Matt.
Can't keep saying these words and not expect awful actions to take place. It's his fault. He did it. It's Charlie Kirk's fault. That's the norm they are trying to bring to this country, Lee. Whether it's $2 billion with a B dollars worth of burned businesses, the violence. Hey, you can't speak up. You can't go out. And you know what really bothers me this morning about this? There's a ton of commentary on our side, including from security experts who are very well-meaning. And they're on television. And they're going, what was he thinking? Being out in public and being you know, out there without bulletproof glass. Do you hear yourself?
No.
Do you hear yourself? What they're saying is, well, right-wingers, we can't go out in public anymore without glass. We can't, we have to be inside in buildings. We can't be in fields because they'll kill us. That's being normalized right now. That's a win for them. Don't let them win. Don't let them.
House Majority Leader Steve Scalise joined Newell Normand at WWL Radio in New Orleans to talk about his friendship with Kirk and how he saw the 31-year-old come to emerge as a political star in the GOP. It's worth noting that Congressman Scalise was targeted, shot, and almost killed in an assassination attempt in 2017.
He lives up to some of the ideals that I just talked about in my monologue, that he would not be deterred. And he has not been. And he has been a true leader as a result thereof on so many different fronts. And an inspiration to a lot of people who will not be silenced. And I thank him for saying, and welcome to the show, Steve.
Hey, Noel, it's a tough day, but I appreciate what you've been saying, and
important that we keep saying it.
You knew Charlie. I mean, he walked into the lion's den and engaged folks and, you know, entered, loved to debate. I loved watching him. He was a remarkable young man, a remarkable man of faith, has a beautiful wife, two beautiful children. And it seems as though we talk about and aspire to diversity all the time, but it doesn't seem like diversity of thought is what is on the minds of some of these folks. Your thoughts?
Yeah, there's so many sad things about, you know, what happened yesterday, Noel, and I'm sad, I'm angry, but I also think it's important that we reflect and remember how powerful of a person Charlie was in such a short time. I mean, 31 years old, just think of the impact, Noel, that Charlie had on this country in just 31 years. I mean, he started a movement. How many young people at 18 years old, when he walked away from college because he didn't feel he was getting the kind of education, it was more an indoctrination, and he was surely ahead of his time on calling that out, but he said, I'm not going to be a part of this. I'm going to go and do something about it. And as an 18-year-old, to think I can do something about it and make a difference, and then actually go make a difference and impact millions of lives. I mean, not just young people. Well, he brought so many young people into the political movement, and not just people that agreed with him, by the way. He cherished the debate. You know, you disagree with me, that's fine. Come on and just explain what you believe in and why, and force people to rethink maybe what they believed in, which is so important. It's kind of the heart of why you go to college, is to, you know, to learn how to think, not to be told what to think. And I think that's what threatens so many people too on the other side, that, you know, here you've got this young person who was charismatic, who was inspirational. And then yet Charlie was also a family man. He was a man, as you said, of deep faith. And he's got this young family. And it's just so heartbreaking that these beautiful young kids will never really know their father the way they should. And yet he had such an impact in such a positive way on so many people. And hopefully his memory lives on and the movement lives on. And I know there's a lot of talk about that right now.
What can we do? What do we do? You know, and as I watched some of the social networks for about an hour last night, I had to turn it off because the level of insult and ignorance and just pure evil, people celebrating the death of a young man, so very excited about it, and actually giving examples of why they thought he should die. And it was basically a political position.
And as I sat there and watched this, I'm
like, there's no fixing this.
No, but you know what? You know, and this is where sunlight is the best disinfectant. I mean, you need anybody who dare go and celebrate the death of any other human being at a moment like this. You should let them be known. Let it be known who they are. And you know, maybe somebody around them will put a mirror in front of them and say, think about what you're saying and doing. And this is the time for you to, why do you have so much hate in your heart that you would celebrate the fact that somebody was murdered for what they believe in America? Is that really what you think this country should be? And is that who you want us to be? Because that's what you are trying to drive towards if you celebrate the death of someone like Charlie. And hopefully we can force other people to think about their actions and to stop demonizing somebody because of their political beliefs to the point where you think it's okay to commit violence against someone you disagree with. I mean, the greatest thing about this country is we can disagree with each other. We can speak out against our government. We can go to the ballot box and make your statement there. That's where we settle our differences. You know, we're not going to be a third world nation. We should never allow this to be okay.
Yeah. The reaction of the country, the reaction just inside the Beltway and the reaction in Congress seems to be markedly different today than it was when you were lying on a baseball field fighting for your life. And I'm completely mystified and confused by that. I mean, we didn't see this level of vitriol. And it's almost as though we've taken it to a new level.
Yeah, it's concerning. I mean, you almost think with, you know, with social media, people can just become caricatures, like cartoon characters or memes, where you don't even look at each other like human beings. I mean, you know, here is a young 31-year-old man with a wife with two young kids. And, you know, we're hopefully going to real soon find out who the shooter is. Did he even care about that? Did he just think this was like a video game? I don't know, Noel. And you know, there's no justification for it, but it's getting worse. And, you know, we've gone through moments like this in our country. You know, in the 60s, you saw assassinations of public figures, not all political leaders, but public figures. And then we got beyond that for a while. But it's a point. We've all got to come to a point where we say, you know, we're not going to allow it and tolerate it. And people who celebrate this need to really check their compass.
Yeah, you know, disappointing for me yesterday, I had to be somewhere, and they flipped to the U.S. House because there was going to be a moment of silence and prayer. So I said, well, I want to wait, and I want to see it, and I want to participate. I want to pray with Congress. Congressman, I got to tell you, it was a huge disappointment. It was like, you know, after that unwound and people were saying and heckling and doing whatever, I didn't understand. I literally had tears in my eyes.
Yeah, how it got to that, and I saw, I was there, and you're just like, do you not even recognize the moment that we're in? Shouldn't matter what the political leanings of the person are. It's bad for America when something like this happens. And you know, can everybody at least put their armor down for a moment and recognize the humanity?
Yeah, it doesn't make you less. You know, it makes you more. And I don't know why we've lost sight of that. I don't know. And I'm sure, you know, you knew Charlie. I didn't. I was always intrigued by him. I loved to watch his debates. And I was just always amazed at his impact on folks. And I got to see so many aha moments where I think he actually got a lot of the folks that he debated kind of pause and look inward and, you know, say, I might want to rethink what I've been doing and saying here. You know, and I think the same worked for Charlie. So, you know, there were some times where he said, yeah, I never thought about it that way. Didn't consider it, but I will.
And ultimately, again, why do you go to college? You go there to learn and challenge what you're thinking and sharpen what you're thinking. Maybe if you disagreed with him, maybe you understood better why you disagreed. But maybe you also questioned what you originally believed, and now you can understand the other point of view. And everybody should be willing to kind of have that open debate with other people. And if you can't defend your position, maybe your position's wrong. And that's how Charlie approached it. You know, it's a sad time, and there is a lot of anger, but it's also a time, and I think Charlie, of all people, would appreciate this, where we should pray. And I'm glad that you said, let's pray for Charlie and his family, because they need it. You know, they need it. Charlie's hopefully going up to heaven. He believes in God. Let him have that moment. But his family's going to be hurting for a long time. And let's keep them in our prayers as well.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Red Meat. Don't forget to smash that subscribe button for your favorite tasty assortment of conservative audio. And follow your local Odyssey talk station to get shows from these hosts delivered daily wherever you get your podcasts. Until next time, stay hungry.